David Dieder.
David Dieder.
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 They're recording now, yeah?
Yeah, we're just going to just...
His 10 books have been published.
Just keep it running, type thing.
25 languages. You know what? With this guy, it feels like he's written his own Wikipedia, low key.
Yeah. He's prolific, apparently.
When I was reading, I was like, this doesn't sound like someone who's objective. Third person, like, you're writing about you, sounds like... David Dieder. See when you write your own blog?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, your own LinkedIn.
You know what I mean? Like,
multi-million.
Multi-faceted.
Award-winning.
Award-winning, strong, alpha male, David Dieder. It's like, shut the fuck up, man. Yeah. Who are you?
Polymath.
All so, right. Yeah. But okay. Before you just... Spicy. Like, let's just talk normally. Because I want to know how you two are doing, first of all.
Okay, calm. Yeah, it's true.
Thank you. Listen, someone like, looking out for the mental health. Let's go back to work.
Have you seen the time, bruv? This guy wants to go to some dinner at 2.
So lunch.
It's late, isn't it?
I'm going for a brunch. It's a brunch.
Why are we brunch?
Actually, my uncle, my dad, so it's actually, yeah, okay. Chilton.
Yeah,
you're
acting
chilting.
Like it's some girl.
Nah. That's later. Anyway.
Swear down.
Nah.
That's what the tip.
But yeah, how is everyone?
Yeah, calm. Good.
Calm, man.
How's everyone's weekend, first of all? Because the sun was out.
Someone snaked me, but let's not get into that.
Trust.
But wow. He's got a girl now, it's fine. Wow. So everyone's in relationships at the moment. So me and Shafi are feeling a bit lonely.
They're not lonely.
Oh, except for Zach. But
yeah. You're let's just keep that one.
You're transparent sometimes.
Let's keep that one there.
He's opaque and then he disappears.
Let's keep that one there.
Zach is private. That's how I describe him.
He's just private being.
Invisible. I don't know.
Do you know what I mean?
But it's like, oh, Zach's here.
He's in and out. And I love that about him, but
I'm here now.
When you're out here, we're trying to have a hot boy summer, innit?
Listen,
we've been saying for like 2 years.
I'm about it.
Let it go.
Failing.
Oh god. No, you and Shabby can hold hands into the abyss. It's fine.
No, for real.
But yeah. Okay, let's introduce this thing. Hi guys, this is It's Not a Book Club podcast. This is episode 2, and you're here with myself, Ruben, and I'm joined with the usual lot. Zach and Kende, and we've just read, shit, what's the book called again?
The Way of the Superior Man.
The Way of the Superior Man.
By David Dieder.
And I feel like, you know, just before we even start this, I still think it's wild that you recommended this book after your statement from the last book, I was saying.
Wow.
I think black women, this
book is whoa. Okay. So,
yeah, it sounds mad, bro.
Before we go with the shotguns.
Oh, yeah, no, okay, yeah. Cool.
Let's just clarify something. So,
okay.
My take with the last podcast, I felt like if we actually listened to it, was a very valid take.
Cool.
About how black women would enjoy a book that essentially bigged them up. This book now, I feel like, okay, the title was a bit mad, let's be honest.
Mm.
Superior Man. But at the same time, I feel like if you dig a bit deeper, it doesn't actually mean men are superior. It just means how men can kind of grow into whatever their best self is. Do you get what I'm saying? So,
I agree.
On surface level, it might seem mad, but it's not actually the madness that you're trying to...
But at the same time, there are a couple of chapters that feel very black and white.
Mm.
And they do, in some way, without... I'm not trying to be coy today, because I think the book can kind of inspire a lot of toxicity, which I think... It's fine. Like, if you have a space for have a toxic conversation, then it's okay. It's a safe space. But I do feel like some other chapters are quite black and white, and it kind of, in some ways, objectifies women just to be an object or like something that accompanies a man's trajectory.
Mm.
But then again, there are other chapters which kind of shows how important women are or to a man's growth, because it is a mutual... I mean, relations are mutually beneficial, but there's loads of things, because they talk about relationships, they talk about career growth, they talk about, you know, you as a human being and just as a man, even because remember the book is The Superior Man, right? But ultimately, the book is tailored at somebody who they define as masculine,
okay,
which is interesting
so,
in the beginning.
But, so, based on that trope, what can someone give a brief synopsis? Is that uses your book?
Yeah, I can give a rough synopsis. So essentially the book is a spiritual guide to understanding masculinity, womanhood, sexual desire. Yeah. And I think it kind of aims to try and share ideas about those kind of topics through the lens, I guess, of a man. And it gets into some choppy waters about the roles of men and women and where we stand with them. It was published in, I believe, the 90s. I think it was published in like 1997.
Okay, that's interesting.
Which is quite telling, I
think. Wow, that's interesting. Didn't know it was that late.
I thought it was relatively. Okay, that's kind of changed my... Because a lot of the ideas in the book could be seen as outdated now, because it was 30 years ago, I guess. So I would...
You think
take
so?
Them to, pardon?
You think so?
Yeah, in total.
100%.
Strange,
interesting.
Yeah,
interesting.
Okay. They are
very outdated.
Like, explain yourself. In the sense of this ownership of your woman, the terminology within throughout this book is extremely misogynistic.
Mm.
What is it, your woman, what does that even mean? That's one of the main problems that feminism or being a feminist, they highlight. There's no ownership over a woman. She's not your woman, it's a woman.
Mm.
She's a partner within your relationship.
Mm.
And just from the get-go, he misunderstands what it means to be in a relationship. As soon as you start to perceive yourself of owning someone else, it's deeply, deeply problematic. And it doesn't add to your character of this idea of masculinity, and this defines you as being masculine and you having woman, and you know this words of rubbish, like,
my issue was kind of similar to that, where it felt like he was,
so that's what I meant,
he was
what
nice hopefully no he definitely lent into a lot of stereotypical narratives of like what a man should be. It's very hunter-gatherer, kind of like kind of grunting man who's full of these like base primitive sexual desires of like ravishing a woman. And like, it's interesting because it being written in the 90s, I think you can tell, really, like you can tell that it's an outdated version of what masculinity is compared to now.
It's interesting though, because I agree, and in no ways like today am I trying to defend this book, but I do feel like I'll explain it. A lot of some of these chapters can be misinterpreted, and don't get me wrong. There are times where he says like, "You're a woman," and that's what I'm saying. Like, you're objectifying women or you're objectifying certain scenarios. But I do think in the beginning, it's quite good actually. Introduction.
I agree.
In terms of polarity, because I think our issue.
What does it even mean?
Hold on. No.
Firstly, touching on Zach's point about masculinity and stuff. So. In the beginning, he talks about polarity and he talks about masculine and feminine, right? But we have this issue today of it being so binary. So masculine, we assume, is men and femininity is women, right? And throughout the book, he does explain you can be male and be feminine. Like there is, let's say you can put a graph, right? And some guys could be 80% feminine and 20% masculine, or you can be up and down. The thing is, what he's trying to say is that for you to be in a healthy relationship, because relationship with somebody isn't just about, oh, I like them as a person, the personality is great. You sex with them is also part of that. And there are aspirations in terms of you're both career driven or whatever. Mm-hmm. But he's trying to say in terms of polarity that you need a masculine feminine energy to have sex with somebody, because somebody wants to be dominated and wants to be dominator.
Submissive.
Yeah. But that's just me saying, in terms of him talking about polarity when it comes to sex and masculine femininity, there's a joint membership, there's a joint partnership where, you know, someone likes to receive and someone wants to give, but it's interchangeable. But the thing is, the point is, you can't have a partner who, you can't have two people in a relationship who both want to receive 100%,
okay,
or both want to give.
So I just want to touch on that point.
And that's
right?
What he was kind of talking about.
Being
that
dominant isn't uniquely tied to being a man or being masculine. No, that needs to be so. What he was said saying? He didn't say that.
Because masculine, feminine. I said already, masculine doesn't equal man, and that's what I'm saying. We have an issue of binary thinking already.
Let me finish. Because, okay, so he says that.
Yeah.
So he tries to. It's almost like he tries to justify that himself and his ideas prior to elaborating on them throughout the book. So he says that masculine, or being masculine, when I use the word or terminology masculine, doesn't necessarily mean male or tied to sex. But then on the same line, so let's go to chapter 26. You go to chapter 26, and he gives ideas whose ideas of masculinity are tied to sexual attributes of being male, right? And this is the idea that, you know, you often want more than one woman. You're more masculine.
Yeah, I put a note by this podcast.
Do you understand that? In the sense that you can't, at one sense, say, "Oh, this is doesn't matter if you're heterosexual, homosexual, bisexual. You always be there'll be a masculine and a feminine
energy,
not energy behavior attributed to in that relationship." That's false. What he should have said, there will always be a dominant and submissive person within a relationship, but again, right? And that's fine. That's completely fine. That's your subjective understanding and your interpretation of what it means to be in a relationship. There's always going to be a more dominant character and more submissive character. And the two will maybe interchange depending on the situation or scenario, right? That's fine. But you then saying that being dominant is tied to being a man or tied to being masculine is false. That's completely false. And that's the main issue throughout this whole book. And you can't at one point say, or try and justify at the beginning and say, "Oh, you know, I didn't mean it like this. You know, being a woman, you can be masculine too." But then tie being masculine to sexually attributed things that only men can experience, like ejaculation, like this need to be dominant and ravish your woman. Like, you wouldn't use that terminology throughout your whole book.
My take on that is that I feel like one thing that does scream from this book is that I get the impression that he's like projecting his idea of what
100%
like a man looks like or acts like, and then projecting that view onto how he writes about what men should do, how men should act. Mm. At times, like when he says, like you said in chapter 26 about you may desire more than one woman. Mm. Or,
yeah, that was a bit mad.
And it's almost like he's like giving permission because it's part of your manly desires to want to be with more women. But then he's like, well, you probably shouldn't do it, but it's also part of your natural desire. So it's almost excusing a lot of more negative traits of masculinity that I think he does almost as like a sort of projection of his version of masculinity, which I think obviously it's subjective. It's a book that's written by a person. He's going to have his own views with it.
Of course.
But
question though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Last book, in many regards, we talk about monogamy, polygamy. As an ecologist, cool. Would you say, and this is, I'm really asking as a question because it's something which I think most of, as a guy, right?
Yeah.
Some people would argue, I don't agree, but some people would argue, I don't believe in monogamy. Monogamy is a social construct and, you know, we're animals and therefore we should be with more than one person. The thing is with me, I feel like some people want to be with most people, but they see monogamy as part of the society or part of the structure of life. So they try to do it. It doesn't work for them. They end up cheating or so. Mm. And they might use that as an excuse. I think the excuse is quite lame, but it's an excuse for them nonetheless. Mm. But do you think, as an ecologist, like, it's natural for people to be in a one mate scenario, or in a polygamous scenario where they're able to date? Because obviously nowadays the people have open relationships where they have a contract with the person they're with, and they say, "We are in an open relationship. I will date whoever I want to date, but I'll keep you in the loop," basically. So based on what we're talking about now in terms of being with multiple women, in many regards, could you argue, because again, this book is very much like you can take what you want from it, because I feel like this book is written by someone who is either doesn't get many women, as in doesn't dated much or doesn't actually know any women. Like, why do you think doesn't that? Know women to a level, like, you know.
Why do you think that?
Hold on. Do you know, have you ever had a feeling where you have a friend who has no, is like an only sibling, so their relationship with the opposite sex might be quite
disjointed.
It's not disjointed is the wrong word. I think it's very much like what give and take or relationship based. Mm. Whilst those who have siblings, they understand, or obviously different gender, like they understand that you can be friends with the opposite gender.
They're just human.
Because they had that before. Yeah. They're comfortable. They're human. Yeah, cool.
Yeah,
but like if you're not around that scenario, obviously you're not going to be able to do that. So based on this, do you think that sometimes in this chapter you can take this as, you know, whether you're male or female,
yeah,
if you're in a relationship, you could be like, oh, you might have a moment where it's like, oh, obviously I love who I'm with, but then what if?
So how is this related to the ecologist? So what was the question?
As an ecologist, do you think that it's natural for human beings to be with one or multiple people?
Okay, it's an interesting question. I think as humans, we're in a unique space in terms of, as a species, in that culture is a huge influence in our decision making. So depending on your culture, things can be perceived as norm or abnormal. And that can change depending on the time period too. So at one point of time in human history, it may be acceptable to be more polygamous. And at another point in time where it gets a bit more conservative, it's frowned upon, and you're more monogamous. You display more monogamy, right? As humans, what it's seen is that we kind of, depending on society, it just interchanges. Or where you are, or what culture you exude, it just interchanges between polygamy, monogamy. The two mainly work out and quite fine. And but what's normally seen is monogamy, and that's kind of consistent in a lot of societies, human societies. You go to tribes in East Africa, to quite rural villages within northern India, and even Amazonian tribes, tribes within Polynesia. You see that it's quite consistent. So you can say that, similar to other species, that monogamy is kind of is probably the most dominant kind of sexual pairing.
Cool.
Within humans, but there are examples of polygamy, and that's fine. So there isn't no right or wrong answer, and you're seeing that now, you know, where it's becoming much more acceptable. It's being more explored as society becomes much more liberal, and it's okay to see more partners and etc. So to answer your question, it's a bit of both. It's neither normal or not abnormal.
What you say was interesting about how culture plays a massive role in regards to
100%
our decision making,
and
which I guess is different to other
animal species.
Yeah,
that the culture. There's asterisks on that because other animal species do display culture. An example of that is orca. So I was reading a really interesting paper attributed to a population of orca that is actually declining because they aren't actually actively communicating with other populations of orca that are displaying different cultural traits. So just, they actually are quite isolated. They're very restrictive in terms of the diet. So some orca populations only eat salmon and fish. Other orca populations hunt. And have designed or have culturally learned to hunt.
Well, that's also geography though as well.
No, but it's similar to humans.
Yeah, you know,
in some spaces, and some humans may have learned to, for instance, or design tools to be much more agricultural based, and that spreads to societies in which don't necessarily have an environment that, you know, caters towards that.
Here's a question.
Going back to what I was saying, so let me just finish my point in the sense of culture, in the sense that, based on that point, this idea of a superior man is incredibly Eurocentric and a Western viewpoint of what of adopting the gender roles within a partnership of a man and a woman. A man has to display these characteristics, and a female has to display these another set of characteristics, and that is the basis of his idea and his interpretation.
I don't think it's Eurocentric because, like,
why
some, like, a lot of cultures, whether it's African culture, for example, or other cultures in the world, do exhibit a similar kind of, or if not more, male centric view of how partnerships work, whether that's polyamorous relationships or monogamous relationships, where you've got the man as like the center of the household, the and provider, with multiple wives doing multiple of those roles that we're talking about that might demean that position, but it's kind of all in subservience to the man. And I think, if anything, I think I'm not sure where this comes from, like where this idea of in a monogamous relationship, these are the divisions of kind of roles. Because even when you're just talking about the animal kingdom, for example, like it's interesting to consider, like, are there
innate
kind of behavioral divisions of labor within
so
male and female species of animal?
So that's why I was really conflicted, because half I was slating this book from the beginning. It's, oh no, this is shit. Why is that? Why is everyone
reading
this book?
Was,
this is wild. Blah blah blah. I was like, yo, I'll be viewing my friend very differently if something my friend was like, yo, this is a sick book, you should read this. I'd be like, yo, whoa, your viewpoints are mad. But as I was getting into the book, I got a bit more conflicted, in the sense that at the end of the day, there are biological differences between being man and being a woman, and that's attributed to the hormones and the hormonal differences of testosterone and estrogen. As a man, we are 30% stronger just naturally, biologically. We always will be 30% stronger. And tied to that, there are going to be sexual dimorphisms, right, within that species, similar to in lions, similar to in other
you're talking about mammals though, right?
The mammal, or even in, so even if you look at fish, for example, it's flipped, whereas the female is often bigger than the male fish species, so they are actually more displayed, much more dominant. But that's just that's literally tied to the biology. And I think a lot of people forget that has influenced culture and our interpretations of what is right and wrong. And it's funny, because I was reading this, I was like, oh, I'm a bit of a hypocrite, because the PhD that I'm looking to do is looking at human behavioral ecology, is looking at behaviors that humans exude and trying to tie it down to set ideas that we often give or use to understand other animal behaviors or other animal populations, right? So I submit a proposal about intersexual competition within women and females, in that
explain that,
in the sense that there are set in theory strategies to be successful in competing for a mate or a potential partner, that as is very reminiscent in all species, but is actually there are signs of that existing within humans.
For Tinder, isn't it?
No, but Tinder is a very good behavioral experiment in seeing you. For instance, if you see a trend, you can identify. That's what science is. You have a sample of people and then give them a question or pose a question and see, observe if that answer is being shared between a certain group more than another. Within that population, whatever. That's a brutal explanation, but yeah, don't kill me for that.
Don't quote me.
But yeah, so what I was looking at is in terms of the intersexual selection. Does that competition, does that exist within humans? Do women exude that? Are there differences? Are there different strategies that are attributed to the social and economic climate with where that woman is based? So are women who are from a lower socioeconomic background, or even men, are they more competitive naturally than men from a more, or women, sorry, from a more affluent neighborhood? It's an interesting question. And what we've seen, or what some scientists have seen and seen from in terms of researching that, an example of that is a scientist called Daniel Nettle in Newcastle. And he's seen that depending on your socioeconomic background, your life strategy, how you approach life, changes, similar to if a species is has, you're more risk averse when you are in a more affluent neighborhood in comparison to when you're not in a lower socioeconomic bracket or in a quite a deprived neighborhood. because you have more, your life can be perceived in the long term in comparison to the short term. And he's tied that to R and K selection, which is R selected species are much more fast moving, K selected species much more slow moving. So as a rhino, you're putting all your effort into one offspring, you're knowing that the likelihood of that, you know, you surviving is higher in comparison to if you're a fly, you produce a lot of offspring, you know, much more fast moving, you know, you've got a short but time isn't, span.
When there's research be based off the area, because again, it's back to culture, because even for like in India, for example, traditionally, like arranged marriage is not, I mean, it depends who you're asking, but in
100%.
Normally
so
older generations, it's
any,
fine.
Any of these,
but when you
so
think about cultures,
ideas, you can't
in America,
extrapolate to the whole, all course. Humans, because one, humans are incredibly complex, right? It may be applicable for one certain population in one certain area, so that he can only say that in Newcastle this is what's representative. And that's what you do in science. You can't make outlandish claims.
Exactly.
And going back to the book, he just spouts off all these statistics and facts, and he mistakes anecdotal,
not really statistics,
and subjective.
I don't think there's any facts in this book.
He says 80% of men are display masculine tendencies. 10% are more neutral, and another 10% are more feminine.
Yeah.
Where the fuck did those statistics come from? It's like me saying 70% of the time I'm right. Like, what? Like, you're just spouting numbers, and that's what I'm saying. There's something wrong with this book in the sense that he mistakes, or it's dangerous too. Because, and a lot of people just away from this book, just within society, it's a big problem at the moment where you have this pseudoscience where you can say something with confidence, and because you're saying something with confidence and you've written it in a way in which is eloquent, it can be misinterpreted as factual information. It's a subjective opinion, it's an anecdotal statement, but you've written it in a way that we can miss. That can be misinterpreted.
I don't think he leans into facts that hard. I feel like
he doesn't. But he puts it in there.
But that's false.
Research things you read. Yeah, how many statistics do you need to see before you start to feel like it's valid? He literally has like maybe 3 max, and the numbers are so rounded up or rounded down.
Yeah.
You don't even take, like, even like
you can
that,
tell
I'm not
he's just
that.
Saying it
oh, no,
in like
okay.
a general.
It doesn't make
oh, no, 100%, but sense. But for
I agree.
You guys,
this
for you
book
guys,
could affirm,
lie,
this
you
could
guys
affirm are... somebody's right move.
Exactly.
I understand that. But again, this book, right, is almost seen as like a spiritual theatre. It's not. It's even very nihilistic. It's like, this is how life is. It's how you live and you die. There are some part. I want to see what you guys think is in this book is right, right? Because there's a lot of it that's misogynistic. There's a lot of parts which, I mean, don't stick to any code of ethics. But I think there are a couple. I mean, I got one chapter which I think was quite interesting. But I want to know from you guys what chapter or even what line all you right. think
was wild.
No, is right. Is like,
it's
oh,
right.
I, yes, is, oh, I agree
ready
with.
Ready to slander, but me personally, I, like the.
You sent me read the whole book, there's not one sentence you thought,
listen,
oh, that's
no.
interesting.
The
or,
part I personally felt that
okay, you know
resonated
go on.
Was the part when he's talking about not to wait for the completion of anything in life in
yeah.
terms of,
yeah.
all right, cool, you want to do something and you're waiting for other things to sort of manifest in order for you to do that thing.
Yeah,
I did like that whole idea of just being like, you know what, I'm going to prioritize what I want to do and do it now. I also
that's quite
felt
early
like
in the book. I remember that part. Yeah.
The birthday thing is interesting when he talks about when like if you got a partner.
Yeah,
it's good advice for like younger people anyway.
That's what
don't,
I'm saying.
Don't be the person who says, "Ah, oh, what do you want to do, babe, on your birthday?" Like, have something like done, and just that kind of doctrine of just decisiveness, I feel like is a useful thing for anyone, whether you're a man or a woman. But I feel like as a man reading it, I think it's useful to say, okay, cool, like it is something that from past relationship, for example, you might recognize, or I might recognize, for example, where sometimes you just need to cut through, like not because indecision, I'm not going to say that's a feminine trait, but
it's not.
It's at times exhibited by women. And I feel like if what David Dyer kind of says is that rather than kind of engage in that indecision, just make a decision. And like, all of this kind of rests on this idea of what a man is like, what a woman is like. But I do think that being decisive,
which is deeply flawed, but go on.
It's deeply flawed, of course it's deeply flawed. Mm. But if we're looking at things that we can progressively take from the book, then I say that's one of them. Like, But then I also found it weird when he talks about like the find your purpose, like in a mad simplistic way, as if it's you can just find your purpose, and then that's the kind of man that you need to be, and then you'd be most attracted to women.
He was even saying, find your purpose before a relationship or something like that as well.
Mm. Yeah.
But I don't agree necessarily, because it's like, it's the same what you're saying before about certain people could easily be like, okay, I'm not going to date anybody because I haven't got enough money yet, or I'm not ready yet, or I'm not this yet. And what that does is it makes someone who's more masculine, or whatever you want to describe it, as being very unserious with dating, or unserious about meeting people properly or being present with somebody, because all they're doing is trying to chase this bag or this money. Because again, like you're saying, right? Because it's quite contradictory, where one chapter is saying, you know, chase the bag, but like be present. And that's his very nihilistic way of thinking. So he's quite nihilistic in terms of being present all the time. Test me when it gets to the end, but sex, we'll get to that later. But all that by being present and not always thinking long, like not always think of long term, obviously, but don't always be, I'm going to be, you know, I'm thinking about when I'm going to be having my abs, or when I'm going to be the CEO, or when you should be present now and be decisive now. Move accordingly to how you want to be with the person you want to be with, but also be present. But at the same time, he's also in another chapter saying, you know, focus on your goals and don't be serious about relationship until you get to where you need to go. And it's like, I can't really disagree with that, because I feel like you should actually be able to, I mean, obviously if you don't feel like your friend actually there to date somebody or whatever, that's fair enough. But I feel like being open with somebody has got enough to do with your career choices. It's got enough to do with how you feel like mentally at home. Like, cool. You should be able to date somebody no matter what your situation, because that person you're going to be with should be able to understand that, okay. Be present with you. Like, it's about being intimate with somebody, right? End of the day. And I feel like you shouldn't base a lot of your relationship, well, some relationships you could base it off financial things or career stress or whatever, but end of the day, relationships are, you know, it's 50-50. And there's a lot of compromises, and you should be allowed to depend on someone as much as they can depend on you. Do you know what I mean?
So what would be your positive takeaway from the book?
The thing is, like I said, the book is problematic, right? I think as a whole.
Mm.
But I think for me, I pick and choose. Because, okay, it's not research. It's just this guy's just talking jargon, really. But I did like the idea of him saying being flexible is important. Because I think today we have an issue, a lot of us anyway, like, I don't know where I want to be. I think I'm fortunate, because obviously I always want to do architecture, and it's a 7-year thing. It's like if I want to be a doctor, it takes 7 years, I have to bang it out, do you know what I mean?
Mm.
And it means I have a 7-year, even a decade at least, of where I can study and get a job, right? Or whatever. A lot of people don't have that kind of, they're not fortunate enough to do that. So it's easy for me to be like, oh yeah, you know, get a go on whatever. But for me, flexibility is important, because you feel like you haven't got your purpose in life, or you feel like you haven't achieved what you want to achieve, it's okay for you to start something and be like, no, this is not for me, I want to do something else. Like, we're so stuck in this realm of, you know, you have to be, you know, you're going to do graphic design? All right, do that till you're dead. Do you know what I mean? Like, you want to be an actor? Fighting.
So almost being flexible.
Being flexible in terms of, and be happy with yourself to be like, okay, I'm going to try this. I don't know if I like it enough, but I'm going to try and do it. Because not everybody has the, you know, it's like everybody trying to be an owner, a business owner.
Oh, a business entrepreneur.
An entrepreneur or a freelancer. Like, I know for myself, I could do some freelance work, but as a full-time freelance, that's not for me.
Cool.
Yeah. And I know that. Yeah. And like, so it's about being honest with yourself.
But isn't that you finding your purpose?
But it is, but I'm saying, it's about you knowing yourself.
Okay.
And that's what the book was talking about in that chapter. Like, if you know yourself, then you can actually do stuff with comfortability. Like, in the book it was saying, if you be comfortable, right, in yourself, you can therefore be like, okay, I'm doing this graphic design work, but you know what? It's not giving me pleasure anymore. I think maybe it's on to jump something else. A normal person today would be like, Locked in. You're giving up.
Yeah.
Stress, depression, ain't got no money. But like, nah, it's okay to change, but make plans for that. Be decisive.
And on that same point, that
you it's just, your life. You take control of it. Like, don't be fed by other people's opinion. Oh, that's also another chapter about. That's the thing about this book. There's actually small gems. There are actually gems in there where it can actually help somebody not depend on other people's opinion. You know, be more comfortable with themselves.
And I think overall, like, if you. Because I feel like this is for a particular kind of man that is like an incel kind of type. Doesn't really know how to communicate with a woman.
Or a man at a certain age in life. Because I feel like...
what do you mean?
No, no.
Yeah, but only a certain person, man of age could write this book. Let's be real.
Huh?
I know. No.
What?
This is what I'm saying.
No, as in like... What do you mean by a man... Listen. We're going to get to a stage where this
book...
No, I'm not saying that.
This book, yeah. This book, I feel like, is written for and by... an older man. Like, for me,
this kind of man that's never had any.
Because he speaks of someone who has been in like a marriage or a long term thing, who's experienced like the kind of back and forth between a woman in that kind of environment. I don't think this book is necessarily aimed at younger men.
I
get what you're saying about incel, but I feel like it's more aimed towards like middle aged men who have experienced being with a woman for a long time, and then the sense
I get is that he's a guy who, regardless of his relationships, he's had a lot of men have told him stories.
Okay, that's
because there's so many different things in there.
And he said that
you can't experience as one man.
He is a scientist or researcher, a speaker, a motivational spiritual speaker, that's what he mixes the two, and then he has sample groups or groups of people and that tell them his experiences or their experiences of being in relationships and etc, and they're probably their troubles in this, which is in itself bias and inherent bias that he is failing to acknowledge. But I would say that going back to the point of saying this book is for incels, maybe I'm wrong by saying that, but what I meant by that is in that the book has got tidbits of positivity, and I would say that as a whole, if it was for like an incel type who are very like inherently very like negative and very dangerous to some of the rhetoric they say, that's what I'm trying to say. Going back to the book, it's actually a positive.
Mm.
It's a positive for those kind of people where they don't know how to interact with a girl. They don't know how to, and they almost need like a list or a summary. It's almost like a guide, a spiritual guide of how to actually navigate a relationship. And don't get me wrong, there are things that are inherently problematic, but then again, he does touch upon things, as you said, you know, in terms of being flexible, not forgetting about your own needs, but also making sure to focus on the needs of your partner and stuff.
But
like
that's
that.
Why I said it's aimed at an older man.
No,
because
it doesn't matter. You could I disagree with that, because I'd say it. Any relationship. When I was in a relationship, with my prior relationship, when I was from 2019 to 23, I learned a lot. A lot of this book was applicable to then, like understanding not to forget your own ideals and what to, you know, focus on your own goals, and that it can actually become a burden in the sense of, which I thought was actually very accurate to some extent, which is ironic in the sense that he was touching upon like, if you adopt their dreams or adopt their aspirations that they perceive of you, that can be seen or deemed as not as weakness, or they won't rate you as much and that you then resent them for doing that, because you're not really doing what you want to do, you're doing what they want to do, and it may be benefiting you, but you haven't actually taken a step back to think about what your goals are. And I was like, oh, that's actually very true.
That's
not just tied to being a man. That happens to a woman or anyone in a relationship. It's just something that you learn being in a relationship, and that's why I don't necessarily think this book is tied to, you know, a man at a certain stage in life. It just feels like if you've been in a long-term relationship, then you would understand a lot of what's being said. A lot of people haven't been in those long-term relationships. And you know, we all know, like, when you date someone, they're just naive to a lot of those things that are just, you just learn naturally and passively through a long-term relationship. That's but what I'm just saying is that this book would actually maybe is positive for a person, maybe an incel kind of type.
And that's why I feel like when he's more broad with his takes and he's more like philosophical generally about, you know, like things like how to be more decisive or being more focused on your own goals is when it's more of a useful book than when he tries to talk about what it is that a woman wants, what it is that a man wants to do. That's when I feel like it gets problematic and it gets very questionable. Whereas when he's like more more in it the kind of
me a little bit.
Openings parts.
Because the beginning is like feminine energy, masculine. I'm like, okay, I understand that these are separate. And I'm but like, okay, so I'm getting into it. And then you read the book and it's like, your woman. I'm thinking, like maybe this guy.
Bad, bro.
Maybe the person with the intro is different to the guy writing the book now. I was just like, wait, hold on.
It's a dog whistle. They try and get you into it, lead you in. And then it gets mad.
Maybe that's the thing. It just gets more and more mad.
It gets more and more mad. Because you can always sense when someone's trying to find another racist, they never say something mad racist. They say, oh, you know, they're a bit annoying, right?
Yeah.
So yeah. Tempt you. You know, it's always them in it.
Yeah.
And it gets worse and worse and worse. And then you say, "Oh, look at that fucking." And it's like, but they never. It's always. It's like it leads you in. It's attracting.
That's a shout, certain, actually, because
it's a dog whistle, and that's why I wrote down that it's a dog whistle for incels in the sense that it's a dog whistle for a certain type of man that feels like that as a man you are entitled to being this. You are entitled to having a woman.
Does it say that though? It doesn't say anything about being entitled.
He's never going to say that because he's going to get cancelled if he says
that.
But the person reading the book,
everyone has. Whoever reads this book, they have a choice. That's my thing, right? They have a choice because I've read this book, you read this book, and we've all had very similar but different takes.
True.
And that's based off our already beliefs that we have, like whether it's left wing or right wing, whatever. And the thing is with me is that I've read certain things and said, okay, that's. Something I could. Some stuff I was like, okay, I need this ready. Some stuff I was like, that's interesting. I've thought about this, but never actually put into words. Some stuff I was like, this is actually ridiculous. What's that? Okay, so for example,
what's a bit that you thought about this and you never put into words?
No, for example, so there's one part I quite like. He says, "Your fear is the sharpest definition of yourself. You should know it. You should feel it virtually consistent. Fear needs to become your friend so that you're no longer uncomfortable with it. Rather, primary fear shows that you are." At your edge. And I was thinking, because I'm starting a new job tomorrow as well. And like, for a long time, thank you.
Black and tech.
Helm it is.
Black and tech. Big firm. In the city. He's made it.
Yeah. But for now.
He's going to be giving me money.
Oh my days. You wait. A lot of people have been asking
petrol
me.
Money.
Oh yeah, that too. Okay, fair enough.
How many years has that been building up for?
He's gonna send me the invoice. Because I remember this date. I took it to.
All those times I had to board it, but it's cool.
It's all love, though. It's calm.
Go on. Sorry, I'll cut you off.
But yeah, no, in regards to like fear, yeah, because for a long time, I think all of us have this. I don't know, some people don't, some people do, but I have this anxiety of starting new things sometimes. Cool. But once I'm getting older, it less affects my first day, less affects how I move. Like obviously I get fear in my stomach or like, oh, what am I gonna fuck up? But I'm like, you know, I've got this, do you know what I mean? And I've never thought about fear being like a positive thing. I thought fear is almost like an instinctual kind of feeling that we all have when we start something new or whatever. But in this book, for that sentence, and the paragraph kind of expands a bit more, but I've kind of want to use fear as a good way to kind of, you know, firstly, fear shows that you care. Fear shows that you love what you're doing, or you know, you want to do a good impression. And I'm kind of using fear to be like, okay, like, how do I make the best of the situation?
It's like a challenge almost to try and push yourself to the edge of that fear.
And that's the thing about fear. Fear is when we grow up, fear, sadness, depression, a lot of these words are seen as bad emotions to have. But in a lot of these, some of these chapters, some of the words he uses, he tries to break that binary code. And I feel like fear, maybe for some people they might think, oh, can I just try and shit, like, I knew it's ready. But I feel like some of people be like, yeah, like
that spoke to me too.
Like, okay, I understand, like, some of these, like, there's nothing wrong with being sad, like, embrace that. There's nothing wrong with being depressed. It's like you have to understand why you are, and so you can come out of that. Like, some of these things, wasting time and being upset about it, and you could do that, but for how long?
Okay, so based on that, what piece of advice do you think we should take, like, Zach or myself should take.
I want to hear what you say, actually.
What I think you should take. Yeah. So from reading this book, I think you should. So one chapter. It's interesting you said about fear, but I think you should. I think it was. Let me find it. It's page 45. I was going to get it. And it is.
But the fear one is in.
Don't get 8. Lost in tasks and duties. That's what I feel like. That's what
I feel
like.
Is that the chapter where he basically says, like,
it's chapter 14. So it's like
trivial things that we kind of keep ourselves.
No, it's in a sense, so you probably notice yourself in a do mode, and sometimes you get lost in that. And that's one thing I was saying, that if you get, you always want to keep doing tasks, you thrive in that. But there are actually inherent negatives to that, and that can affect your relationship. And he says, a man should never get lost in the details of his life and forget that ultimately and in truth, life amounts to nothing other than what is in the deepest truth of this present moment. And that is a very philosophical statement. It actually has some. It's subjective, but it's actually very true.
I feel
like reading that, I was like, that section of the book, I think you should take away.
Mm. I agree with that.
What do you think, Zach? What section of the book do you think is applicable to me? Well, I should take away.
I should take into consideration. So there was two of them for me. It was like one was be willing to change everything in your life.
Yeah,
interesting.
Yeah.
I think for me, just in terms of that willingness to.
Okay, what chapter is that? Is that chapter 12 or something?
Chapter 12. Let me find out.
Yeah, 12.
Yeah. Be willing to change everything in your life. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like embracing the period of unknowing, like he kind of talks about this whole thing of like, okay, cool.
You think I don't do that?
No, I mean, I think, okay.
No, this is a safe space.
I think you can just embrace that kind of like uncertainty of maybe not knowing where you're going, but like being open to drastic change either way. And I think like I resonate with that even myself. I feel like sometimes I can maybe even get into a zone and then not be willing to actually see that a complete 180 could actually be the direction and not necessarily a small move to the right or small to the left, or you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think that one for sure.
What advice would you give Zach?
46, ejaculate up your spine. 100%. Yeah.
Teach me.
Have you experienced that?
I haven't. I need to.
It sounds mad. I read that and I was like, I've experienced that.
Here we go.
Yeah, I know.
This might have to get cut, bro.
Tantric master.
It was maybe like one or twice.
Tell me how
ejaculate up your spine. What is that?
Let him explain. I'll tell you what happened. I got from
okay,
that.
Okay, I'll tell you what. So it was at uni.
Story time.
It was a previous partner that I was seeing. We had that sexual connection, not necessarily in terms of like personality wise, because there's problems there, but in terms of sexual chemistry, off the charts. And I don't think I've actually felt as connected to someone sexually present to her, which is a bit bad mind. That's what I want to admit. But I think in that, there's one time we were having sex and I don't know what she was doing, but I realized it wasn't the same sensation I was getting before. And I was like, oh, let me just go with it. And I think I did that.
Were you high?
No, wasn't high.
Just checking.
Completely sober. No alcohol. Nope, no finger in the butt. No, I've never experienced that too. I'm a bit scared, but let's not get into that. But yeah, so I remember doing it, and then I was like, oh, it was like euphoric, and I just blacked out. I couldn't see properly. I was like, oh, what's going on? And I was just like on the bed, and she was like, I was literally shivering, like it was crazy. And I was like, I've never had that before. And she was gassed. She was like, I've got a fire.
So what? Do you think that you ejaculate up your spine?
No, but when that's what I think. I think when he was describing it, I was like, oh, was that it? Was this a very enhanced orgasm that a lot of guys don't necessarily experience.
Just you.
Yeah.
No. Well, from the book, he was saying that. He was saying, like, this is something that a lot of people don't do. You know, people get accustomed to, like, masturbating in a certain way. And, you know, and I was like, oh, that's actually very true.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to unlearn that when you start having sex. And I had to do that. You have to unlearn, like, the 13-year-old, 14-year-old masturbation and that. That kind of stimulation is not what you're going to get during sex.
And on that as well, I think it's important to, like, be able to touch with your masculine and feminine energy while having sex, because I think sometimes people can be too tied to one idea of how you should be sexually. And I think, like, he kind of talks about being able to unlock some kind of higher level of orgasm or some kind of higher level of release through connecting energies. And I get that's a bit vague and a bit thingy, but I do think that when you are in tune with a woman on a spiritual energy level, you can't really explain, but the intimacy is just
get completely that different in a relationship. Because I personally, I feel like I can only get that in a relationship. I think on all a long term,
maybe it's that. Maybe it's a long term.
But the thing is, that, I feel like you only get that if you know the person well enough to. Because obviously, intimacy is part of sex, right? 100%. But intimacy in terms of, like, if you like the person remotely in terms of how they move or personality, conversation you have, that will play a part of that intimacy, and therefore the sex that you have will be more enjoyable. Yeah, and that does come with time. Because imagine the sex you have somebody in one night compared to someone you've known for how many months. It's going to be different. Do you know what I mean? And there's only so much you can do. So, I mean, the reason I brought that up is because I thought, obviously, like,
have you experienced it?
I actually haven't, no. But I would like to. No, we'll talk. I haven't experienced it. I've experienced very intimate moments, but the way he explains this thing is very interesting.
Are you going to try and do it?
Of course, 100%.
You're going to try and... You're going to... The instructions...
Yeah, the thing is, in the book...
Because he gives instructions.
He doesn't... It says you have to tense the bottom
Kegel
of...
Kegel muscle or something?
Yeah, yeah. Kegels
Kegel
and stuff.
Kegel floor exercises.
Let's do it. I mean, because let's be honest. Like, women as well, they do the... they tense their muscles as well. Yeah. Like, we're not doing it, so we need to learn to do it too. Do you know what I mean? I don't know. I feel
if you do it, I want to... Next podcast, I want to see, I want to hear.
All right, cool. I'm actually going to practice.
If it works,
he might be trying shit, but the thing is, right, I watched a video on it, and he was like, he says up your spine, but what he actually means is that you can get it, you can feel in your arm. Because the point is, so the point of the chapter was this, I wanted to share it, is that, like Zach was saying, when I think, whether it's the world we live in, right, but men and women have a very structured way of what sex is. Because we can heavily blame porn. We can blame other stuff, but let's blame porn for now. We say, okay, men have this thing where they get head, they may lick out if they want to, depending on the porn you watch. And then, basically, end, you finish off on their face, or you the glory shot, do you know what I mean? But that's not what sex is. And so when people start to have sex, they have that routine. Now, the point here is that sex is very intimate, and therefore we should... it's not... to come, it's not to ejaculate, and that's not the whole point of sex. Is not to ejaculate, right? It's to be intimate with somebody and to have it's not meant to, like, I'm gonna have sex to let you finish and then I can finish. It's like, you're meant to, it's about foreplay.
100%.
Do you know what I mean? It's about feeling that, this spiritual energy entwined, and that's why it's very intimate. And that's why you might meet someone and say, giving brains mad intimate than sex, and someone else be like, sex is more intimate. Because for people, like, sex is very different. And intimacy is a large part. You can't... When people say, sex doesn't mean anything, I think that that's bonkers, isn't it?
No, for real.
It's very true.
I mean, spiritual ties and that's another conversation. But I do feel like, for all of us, from this book, I was like, maybe ejaculation isn't the end. Because he's saying premature ejaculation happens because, you know, when you have sex with somebody, your breath quickens. Hormones are rushing. And a way for your body to release that like intensity is through ejaculation, especially with men anyway, right? And so what he's saying is, in the video I was watching, say, breathe slower, breathe deeper, because what happens is you'll feel the breath through your whole body. And that's like steps to, and this is apart from the muscle thing he was talking about in the book. So imagine you're doing that plus breathing deeper, because let's be honest, women like it when you breathe deep in the air. Like arcs like, I don't know all of them, but
80% of women.
Yeah, like the girl, my girl, she likes that. She likes it. So Okay. You have to be, I think, for all of us. Nah, real talk. why not have this podcast and have a safe space where, like, why not improve?
No, 100%.
Because let's be honest, the book is called The Superior Man. I don't think it's superior in terms of better than somebody else, but it's about, like, Zach said.
I think it should be called The Superior Person, Loki.
Well, no, fair enough.
Because it shouldn't be gender specific. Because if he's written for men, it's true.
But, like, again,
he'll be a good book, bro.
Again, he doesn't care. The way he talks about gender isn't as binary as we use it. So, him saying man, he doesn't care. You can change what you want. Like, he's not going to be protective over that word. You can change it if you want to, but I don't think he actually cares that much. Yeah, he says you're a woman in it.
He does care, bro.
No, but it comes across...
It does care.
If you read it black and white, it comes across very stereotypical and gender-specific and misogynistic. Yeah, because it is, though. Fair enough. But I'm trying to say, I'm sure if you ask him, oh, we should change this to pure person, he'd be like, yeah, go on then. Like, he's very blasé. He's very like, I'm giving you this book and you can just do what you wish with it. I feel like he's written like 12 other books. He doesn't care about gender as much as we do. He doesn't.
I think... He gives that across, right? But as I said, there's a lot of dog whistles throughout this book where he says that and then says, you're a pussy. You do
this. Yeah, or like pussy,
you
know, whips.
You need
and
to
stuff.
Ravish a woman. And that's not gender neutral. That's not...
Yeah.
A woman can't take that quote or that statement or even sometimes sections of the book and use it as advice going forward because it's... Obviously oriented.
There's not much in here for women, realistically.
That's what I'm trying to say. So you can't then say, oh, I don't care. Do you think the
intention behind him writing it was, it's not technically for women. I don't think so.
It's true. Why
are you saying that at the beginning of the book?
Hold on.
I'll read it. When I say masculine, when Kenna gets up, he's going to read it. But, when he does say masculine and feminine energies, and he says that is when I you know say these statements, I don't necessarily, these aren't tied to sex or, you know, as a man or stereotypical man or woman. You can be a masculine woman and you can be a feminine man, and he says that in the book. But then on another note, being a feminine man is inherently negative for some reason, or being a masculine woman is inherently negative. So he's trying to uphold.
There's definitely an implication,
right? Yeah. There's uphold those gender specific roles. But then, so he says that, but then completely goes against that. This whole introductory, you know, explanation at the beginning. When he does say very problematic stuff, like, I had a whole list of bits where he's like, this is just wild, bruv. Like, what? Like, page, was it page? The one bit where I was completely out of it when he starts to say race, we've been to race, like, Asian women. Blonde women are passive and then he says,
I skipped that bit.
Read that fucking bit.
I read
that. Then he said, black women,
hot women,
and angry,
and fiery. Yeah,
and then when I saw the white man, I was like, nah,
put the pen down, Dave.
Bye.
Yeah.
Put it down, Dave.
You know what I mean? Like, what's going on?
David, get out of here.
Like, you're chatting shit. And I was like, you can't.
At that point, I was.
Yeah, it's like, bro.
I saw that bit, I was like, next.
But that's what I say. He's trying to bring you in. And then he starts to bring you in.
Ruben, that's the nature of, one, the book being written 30 years ago, and two, like, I feel like reading the book in 2021, you have to just be critical and be like, okay, cool, bullshit. But here's something that is useful.
Okay,
like, we know there's so much in here that
it's
problematic.
The superior man. He has to sell copies.
And it's wrong.
He has to sell copies.
Facts.
110%. And it's wrong to cancel or to just...
dismiss.
No, yeah, dismiss a whole person.
That's what I was trying not to do because obviously there's bits in here that I just mad like... Come on, bruv, like, this is not, you know what I mean? This is not Victorian age. But I was trying to look at it more from a thing of, okay, cool. Open-minded. In the context that we have now,
100%.
What things can be applicable or useful to...
Because imagine, at that time, maybe this book was very helpful. Because remember in the beginning, it does say, you know, back in the 50s or 60s, like, men and women had their roles. Men would go and get money and abuse. They can manipulate women based off money or because of their status, because they work.
Cool, yeah.
But then on the other hand, women can manipulate men through sex or childbirth, stuff like that. That was that kind of generation. Then he moves further to say, oh, so actually now the 80s now, men are dressing more feminine in terms of more like, let's say, maybe he's talking about the hippie craze or maybe he's talking about Motown. You know, that kind of glittery,
yeah, 80s, like
Prince and like that kind of androgynous
thing.
And he's trying to say in terms of femininity, men are exploring that more, whilst before, that wasn't socially acceptable. So again, maybe it kind of goes back to your culture thing about what's acceptable. And so because of that, people are more able to explore. But what he's saying is that when, obviously, men are exploring feminine side and women are exploring more masculine side of life, what happens is women in the workplace may be like, oh, he's spineless. Or they might find it hard to find somebody who's on, quote unquote, their level, because they're like, they're a boss now, but they're now they're women, so they might be treated differently. And so there's other pressures that come with that. And on opposite side, where a man who's, let's say, for example, he wants to be a house husband, they might be deemed as something less than someone because they don't work or stuff like that. So in the book, in the beginning, he does try and give like a kind of historical context, which I guess any writer has to do in the intro. But again, he hits a point where it's like, it's not relevant anymore because 2021.
He hits the limit of his time, basically.
Yeah.
And you can hear that in how it's written.
100%.
And what you said is...
Equally, if you've read this book 20 years ago, it would 100% resonate differently. Culturally, because what's acceptable.
Yeah.
Because now, people are trying to cancel people. Do you know what I mean? Mm. People are trying to... And as well, people are trying to critique everything.
Bro, read... Like, if you were to write a book now about masculinity in the 2021, I think it will be outdated within 10 years.
Do you think?
Five years even, because so like things change at such a rapid pace, and it's like we're having to mold our ideas of masculinity and these kind of things.
And you got to play it safe. Quickly.
Cool.
Yeah.
You got to play it safe as well, because he does things where he plays it safe, and there's moments where he does opposite.
Yeah,
he
just reckless.
Because you have to sell copies, but also you have to kind of be, you know, a bit of friction. Do you know what I mean?
Because think about it, like, the whole thing with this book is that you do like it gives you strong opinions on things, and I think sometimes, like, even though we can have our views wherever they sit, it's still good to engage with something that at least has a like holds a position. Oh shit, that's my thing. I have to actually cut.
We have to go.
Yeah.
All right. No, we can wrap it up.
We just cut this, but yeah. So at least we can like read and engage with something that has a strong position, and it's easy to do that than something that kind of doesn't really give us full opinion or is like half-hearted in saying what it's saying. This guy says what he's saying, cool, and we can critique it, and it gives it something to critique because there's actually a firm point of view that's kind of been presented.
Agreed.
So okay. That's why it was interesting. That's why even like I got this book actually from a Nipsey Hussle reading list. That's actually where I actually saw it.
Oh, interesting.
And I just thought, fuck it. Let's just give it a read. But...
All right.
Hold on. Let's just cut a second. Hold on.
All right. Let's pause a sec.
Should Shafi go and get the door and then we can just... Should we just wrap up?
No, because it's probably my uncle, my dad. Hold on. Let me just... Should we just wrap up?
Let's wrap up. So...
We have to cut this anyway.
Yeah.
Wait, pause. So based on that...
Yeah.
How would you rate the book?
I'll give it four because a lot of it I felt like is useless for me, to be honest with you, as a man that I am now. But also there was, like I said, there's a couple gems, couple little crystals in there that I'm like, you know what, like I can resonate with that, or I can use that in some part, like in some way in my life. So yeah, for me,
what about
it was a four.
Okay, what about you, Kende?
That's an interesting take. I would say the book is based off the person that reads it. Again, it can affirm your opinions if you want it to. I don't know. So, I'll say 3 out of 10. I was going to say, because the book isn't, like, amazingly written. It's not, like, something great.
Mm.
Again, yeah, there's gems in there. But, like, honestly, like, there are some things in which can improve your life. But I don't like self-help books. Never have. I just feel like, why is it... I don't know. Everyone takes life differently. But
you
needed
a bit of spice.
I learn from experiences. Yeah. And you should learn from experiences, like you should be very honest with yourself. And that's how I like to take life. So, when I read a book that says, oh, be this, be that, I'm just like, I'm bored. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah, that's my score.
Ruben?
There's a reason I don't read self-help books. And you know what? I have to even apologize for Raven Leani, because I was like, oh, this is the worst book of the podcast. Slaying or saying all this shit. This is the worst book.
I'm screaming.
Podcast, by far. And I do not recommend this book to read. I think it's deeply, deeply flawed. I think David Dider is... some pseudoscience bullshitter, doesn't know what the fuck's going on. He has very cult-like tendencies, which goes out and just stems throughout the whole book. Dog whistles beyond belief. So much problematic shit in this whole book. Don't get me wrong, with all questionable characters, there are positive aspects to them, and that does come out. But in this book, The Way of the Superior Man, this is a zero. It's a first zero.
Oh, wow. You're overdoing this is
first
it.
Zero. No, it's a zero, bro.
You are overdoing it.
It's a zero. It's a zero.
Okay.
You skipped over book. When have you ever skipped over bits of the book? Bro, you didn't read sections of this book because you knew it was so much bullshit.
This book is not... It's a zero, bro. It's not a narrative book. It's like a...
So you're telling me... So, okay.
It's a zero.
No, so you're telling me there's nothing at all.
Waste my time.
It's a waste of time. That's what... halfway through this book, I was saying, you don't even have to... I'm not gonna
but
lie.
I'm not lying. You judge the cover. You judge the cover way before you even open the book. You judge the cover before you open the book.
No.
I don't feel like you're with a complete open mind. No. I did.
Don't be wrong. I did. And if okay, retract maybe a one. Do you want to give it?
you have to give it something.
I'll give it one.
Yeah.
All right. Just to appease the people who love this book. You know what I mean? Because even Christy gave it a one. So she didn't give a zero.
Christy was clearly female. She didn't like the your woman.
No, but she at least gave it one. I gave it zero, bruv. I didn't see.
Millionaire Hoy gave it five.
Yeah, of course he's gonna give it five. He's never spoke to a woman in his life.
He's a millionaire.
How can you just?
He has never spoke to a woman. Who gives it a five? You've never spoke to a woman in your life. You've never been in a relationship in your life.
Kimberly, though. If you feel
Kimberly,
this book,
oh, she's lost, bro.
Okay,
but it's like those black people. It's like what she is.
Kevin Samuels.
It's like those black people, like, oh, you know,
I don't see racism is a problem in this country.
So like, shut the fuck up. You don't know what's going on. You're oblivious to the real world. So that's why it's a one or a zero. I say it's a zero. I say it's a one. So I don't like. It's ruin fine. Average, but
listen,
right, I cool. don't like self help books.
So
it's getting me mad. But it's cool.
Right, before Ruben loses, yeah, it's cool.
The next book,
Kende, what are you saying?
Alright, cool. So this is gonna be an interesting book. It's called The Disappearance of Rituals, a Typology of the Present. And we will read it.
The Disappearance of Rituals.
What's this guy on, bro? This guy's moving like every book except for.
You're on crowd.
Relax.
You're actually always on crowd.
I'm looking forward to it.
It's my book.
This guy.
Do you know what I mean? Go choose Animal Farm or Great Expectations. Do what you want to do. But I'm doing my book. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, exactly. Or Biff and Chip. You can do that again if you want.
That was your book, bro.
This guy's trying it.
You're joking. That was his idea. But do you know what? It's another open mind. I was just a bit. That was bad. I'm sorry, Kenny.
Triggered you.
That's better. I accept the apology.
To be fair, Kenny's never actually chosen a bad book. Well, everything book.
Yeah, it's only been Zach that's been chosen a bad book.
Relax.
I'll say it if Ruben doesn't. So.
I don't know.
This book for me was a spice addition.
What's my choosing?
He chose American Lit was good.
Yes, the lyric was good.
Did you pick Sula?
No, I took Sula, please. It was. But yeah.
You did Clockwork Orange. No, you're showing something.
No, I'm playing. He's done good books.
You did a Clockwork. That was a very good book.
But yeah, Participants of Rituals. And we'll talk about that, yeah.
What's it about?
Architecture.
Okay, that's exciting.
History.
Don't judge a book by its cover.
That's very true. I thought it was society. I've never read an architectural book, so I'm excited.
It's not architecture per se, buildings, but architecture history.
I'm excited because I've always wanted to do that. So I've been waiting for that.
Cool. This is digestible. But anyways, yeah, cool. That's it. That's
wrapping
today.
Up. Cut. Peace. Send in the podcast. Thank you for listening.
Love.
And this is, we can try and make it monthly. Strict schedule now. We're fucking about. It's monthly. Cool. Peace. Cut. Blup.
It's not a book club podcast.
It's not a book club podcast.